Let me see. I'll try to talk about some very general questions about birational geometry and how you can answer a few of them for quadrics. So I think this is sort of a natural thing in the theory of quadratic forms, as I'll try to explain, and also it's ever so slightly connected to conference, because the good technique for studying quadratic forms is to use Chow groups. So let's see. Okay, I mean, so I don't know. You can say I claim that a goal of quadratic form theory is to understand how to classify projective quadrics up to birational equivalence.
So somewhat polemically, you could, yeah. It's not quite the goal of quadratic form theory, but it turns out to be one of the important goals. Maybe I'll explain some of the words in the sense. So
okay, I'm so a quadric, I mean just a projective hypersurface of degree 2 over some field. NPN plus 1 over a field K, so it's a subvariety defined by one quadratic equation, and it's usually in this talk going to be smooth, although in fact there are some interesting things you can say even when it's singular, and then birational equivalence, I guess, probably clear, but I should maybe say. So the two varieties, X and Y over the same field, K, are called birational if, well, there's two equivalent ways to say it. Either they have isomorphic dense open subsets, so U and X, the V and Y, which are isomorphic, or, on the other hand, that means that they're okay. So isomorphic, I mean over this field K. Again, that's equivalent to the function field, the field of rational functions on these two varieties being isomorphic as field extension of K. Okay. So, I mean, I have to emphasize this stuff about everything being defined over fixed field, because of course quadrics are boring over algebraically closed fields, especially smooth quadrics. So of course every, say, smooth quadric is rational, that is birational to projective space over the algebraic closure by this it's probably inappropriate to give this proof, but what the heck. If you, the point is, so over K bar, or over any point, over some extension field of the field you start with, the quadric X is going to have a rational point. So given a rational point,
in general, the interesting thing about quadrics is they might not have any rational point over the fields you start with. Over the algebraic closure, they certainly will. And in general, if you have a quadric that has a rational point, then what you do is you look at all of the lines through that point. And what you notice is that because this is a quadric, because it has degree 2, a line is going to typically intersect a quadric in exactly two points,
namely this point and exactly one other point. So that construction gives you a birational equivalence between the projective space of lines
through this point.
What is the dimension? Maybe this is the x of dimension n and pn plus 1. So then the
projective space of lines through the point is at pn.
And that becomes birational to the quadric.
Because, you know, at least for most points on the quadric, there will be a unique line. Well, for all, I guess all the points on the quadric, there will be a unique line through that point and this other point, p. Yeah. Okay. I mean, obviously, it's a birational equivalence because a given line might be tangent to the quadric, and then this wouldn't quite work, but
nonetheless, on most, it
gives you an isomorphism between depth open subsets.
Okay. Right. So,
yeah, so the interesting thing is with quadrics is what happens over a given field as they're boring over algebraically closed fields.
Okay.
So, what can you say about this? Well, sort of the simplest questions you can ask in birational geometry are which varieties are rational, which are rational to projective space, but also which varieties are ruled. So as for being rational, I've sort of said everything there is to say.
So, so by this proof, a quadric over some field is rational.
Meaning rational over the given field, if and only if it has a rational point.
Another way to say that is that X is isotropic. What?
Rational means that
it's yeah.
And the opposite is called anisotropic.
So in terms of the quadratic form, that means that if X is a hypersurface defined by some equation Q, I guess there's supposed to be n plus one variables.
So being isotropic means that this equation has a solution
with values in a given field. So elements of the field that satisfy this equation.
Okay, but so
that's the
boring case, and so I'm almost always going to be considering the case where that's not true, maybe with sometimes forgetting to mention it. So usually we just consider anisotropic quadrics. The ones which have no rational point. So so this famously proved that you can actually reduce the classification of quadrics up to isomorphism to classifying anisotropic quadrics. So you might as well do that.
Okay. On the other hand, there's one other interesting question you can ask, almost as elementary, which is which varieties are ruled. So a variety X over some field is ruled. Say this has dimension n. If there is another variety of dimension one less with X birational to P1 times this lower dimensional variety.
Okay. And all this is happening,
so this is a variety over the same field, and
birational equivalence is happening over the same field. Right. So, sort of an obvious weakening of that property. In some sense, this variety, to say that a variety is ruled, is saying that up to birational equivalence, you can reduce the properties of this variety to something lower dimensional. So, it should be considered a sort of relatively trivial class of varieties. Okay. And the sort of thing is, it turns out to be interesting to ask which quadrics are ruled. It's not totally obvious. So the basic point I want to make is that, this has been known, but just note that there are, so even in the special setting of quadrics, this is an interesting question, there are anisotropic quadrics which are ruled. I guess the simplest example is a
a Pfister form of dimension 4. So let Q be a Pfister form. I forget what this is called. Pfister form of dimension 2 to the n with n at least 2.
Then the corresponding quadric is ruled.
So okay.
So interesting to see why that happens. So actually, in fact,
more is true. So this corresponding quadric, if it's in a vector space of dimension 2 to the n, the corresponding projective space has dimension this minus 1, and so the corresponding hypersurface in there has dimension that number minus 2. So in fact, it's birational to...
You can sort of factor out quite a few copies of P1.
It's birational to a variety of half the dimension, I guess, to the n minus 1 minus 1 times the projective space of that dimension.
Okay. Yeah, and what's more, you can say what this lower dimensional variety is. It's just any subquadric in this Pfister quadric of that dimension. So... So a Pfister form of y is the quadratic. It's this is kind of switching between projective quadrics and these polynomials, where Q1 is a Pfister form of dimension Q to the n minus 1.
Yeah.
Okay. So, wait, so let me say why this is. Why are Pfister forms, Pfister quadrics ruled? So it's just sort of an explicit calculation using the important property of Pfister forms, which is that they have this multiplicative structure. So, so right. No, this, yeah. So quadrics are always supposed to be projective quadrics. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Mm. Right, right. Okay, so it should be this thing. Okay, sorry. It should be this thing plus a one-dimensional form.
I guess that will
show up in the proof I'm about to write down. Okay. What do you do? So write this. So write our Pfister quadric. Quadratic form P as P is equal to a quadratic form P1 in Q to the n minus 1 variables, but this is also a Pfister form plus some multiple of this, well, what should it be? Yeah, plus a constant times that same Pfister form. So. Right. I realize that it would be logical to give the definition of the Pfister form, so let me do that. Let's see. Let me just finish writing here. So here. Pfister form of dimension C to the n is a quadratic form that's a tensor product of n two-dimensional forms of this form, let's say. Right, where this bracket notation means the quadratic form of dimension 2, where like say x1 squared minus a1 x2 squared. So, right, so this is a quadratic form on a two-dimensional vector space. You take the tensor product of them, and you get a quadratic form on a 2D n-dimensional vector space. And then you write out what that tensor product means. So this tensor product looks like it's a diagonal quadratic form. So x squared minus a1 times x2 squared minus a2 times some other variable squared, and so on. And then you take all possible products of these things, so like minus a1 times minus a2, et cetera, up to minus a1, et cetera, times minus a n. Okay. Right, and so it's obvious that, as I was saying, a Fischer form of dimension 2 to the n, you can think of it as a Fischer form of dimension 2 to the n minus 1 plus some constant times that same Fischer form of dimension 2 to the n minus 1. Okay. Oh, no. More variables. What do you mean? Yeah. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Right. So those variables should have a different name. Yeah. I'm sorry. Use the one. Yeah. Sorry. So, of course, p is a function of 2 to the n variables. Obviously, this shows that we less risky not to do any calculations at all. But let's try it anyway. Okay, so the important thing about Fischer forms is that they have this multiplicative property. So I'll use this for p1. Which means that there's a way to define a multiplication, and so not at all unique, but there is a way to define a multiplication on this on the vector space of dimension 2 to the n minus 1, where this guy lives. X times y on this vector space of dimension 2 to the n minus 1. Which is not everywhere defined. It's a rational function in two variables. And more precisely, it's a rational function in x and linear in y, such that the important thing about it is that the quadratic form behaves multiplicatively, at least wherever this makes sense, with respect to this multiplication. Okay. So for Fischer forms of dimension, I guess, 1, 2, or 4, maybe, no, A, 2, I guess, you can actually make this a bilinear map by sort of writing down the multiplication on the complex numbers or the quaternions or the octonions, but in higher dimensions, you just have to live with this thing being a rational function in one variable. Okay, right, so you have this, and, right, so now, okay, so, now we can define a rational map from this Fischer quadratic I mentioned around 2 to the n or so. Fischer quadratic is sort of p1 orthogonal from some constant times p1 to the much lower dimensional quadratic. Just p1 orthogonal from a one-dimensional quadratic form, which is that one-dimensional form that came up there. Okay, so how to do this? So, okay, you map a solution of this equation, p1, of these variables plus b times p1 of these variables to a solution of sort of this quadratic equation to, well, let me try to write it like this, p1 of y times x. So, well, let me just write what I have to say. Plus p b times p of y squared. Right. So in other words, using the multiplicative property, because I know this equation is true, if I just multiply this equation by p of y, then I can rewrite it as this equation. So in other words, if this equation is true, then I know this equation is true.
but that can be viewed as a rational point on this quadrant. So that is, we're mapping x, comma y, where x and y are in this 2 to the n minus 1 dimensional vector space to y times x, which is in this 2 to the n minus 1 dimensional space, and then just one extra number, p of y. It probably is, yeah. Thanks. Okay. Right. Okay. Isn't it? Yeah, I think it is. So this thing has dimension around 2 to the n, this has dimension around half that. So now I've got a rational map from this big sister quadric to something around half the dimension, and then what you'd have to observe is that by the linearity of this multiplication of one of the variables, if I had said it correctly, then you just see that the fibers of this map are linear spaces. So, it's a rational map, not quite, because multiplication isn't quite defined everywhere, for example, but that's good enough for my purpose. Given that this quadric of dimension 2 to the n minus 2 is birational to something of half that dimension times the projective space. Okay. So it's actually pleasant to write out this birational equivalence for, say, the simplest interesting example would be when n is 2, so the Pfister form on a four-dimensional vector space corresponds to a quadric surface, and so what I'm saying is that a Pfister quadric surface is birational to just a conic curve times 2, 1, and it's pleasant to write down the formulas. They are nice. Okay, so why should one care if quadrics are ruled or not? I mean, you could just say it's the question is there, and one thing you can say is that the basic tactic that's useful in quadratic form theory is to study, you start with a quadric over one field, and to study it, you end up enlarging the field, maybe to the function field of some other quadric. So, So even if you didn't start out asking these questions, it becomes natural to ask, when is the function field of one quadric isomorphic to the function field of another quadric, and so on. And so this is, within that game, this becomes a very natural question to ask. But also I ran into this for some special reason, which I'll just sort of briefly describe. So I encountered the problem of which quadrics are ruled in this very special problem of trying to compute the automorphism group of the sphere. So the sphere, by which I mean, the set of points in affine space over the real numbers, an plus one of the real numbers, that satisfy this familiar quadratic equation. And the point being, I want to describe the automorphism group of the sphere as an affine algebraic variety. In other words, over the real numbers. So in other words, I want to know what are the polynomial maps from the sphere to itself that have also a polynomial inverse. So this question is something that I've been wondering about for a long time, and maybe it's simple enough that it doesn't need any more justification. So what I could show is that the automorphism group is just the smallest thing could be. So the only obvious polynomial automorphisms are
the orthogonal group. I mean, of course, there are Bayes' Lie groups that act on the sphere, like some kind of projective transformations or conformal transformations, but if you write down the formulas, they involve square roots, so they don't, so they're not polynomial automorphisms. So you could guess that the only automorphisms are the orthogonal group, and what I could show is that that's true if the dimension is the power of 2. For n the power of 2, the automorphism group of the n-sphere is just the orthogonal. Okay, sort of, of course, I mean, sort of the real points of that. So this is just, this is not a statement about algebraic groups, but just the abstract group of automorphisms of this variety. Okay. Right. In fact, it's definitely not a statement about algebraic groups, because if you go from the real numbers to the complex numbers, then it's very easy to see. You can just write down a lot of automorphisms of this affine variety over the complex numbers. It has infinite dimensional automorphism group. So if I went from the real numbers to the complex numbers, this group would become infinite dimensional. And so the only interesting aspect of this question is, what are the automorphisms over some non-algebraic closed field like the real numbers? Shouldn't have written this, but anyway. Okay. So how to do that? So I realized that. Let me just say how you might try to attack this. So this is something in general about how can you possibly describe the automorphisms of an affine algebraic variety. In general, very little is really known about that. So very general of an affine. You want to describe automorphisms of an affine variety over field. There's sort of much more technology for dealing with projective varieties rather than affine varieties. And so an obvious thing to do is compactify it and consider what's going on a compactification. Of course, if U is smooth, you might as well assume that what you're adding in is also maybe a divisor with normal crossings. In this case, it's easy to write down a classification of the sphere, which is just a smooth projective quadric, and this divisor will, I mean, this is just an affine quadric, so it's a projective quadric minus a hyperplane section. Okay, and what can you say then? And then obviously, every automorphism of U is a birational automorphism of the compactification. So if you could understand, it is obviously an isomorphism from a dense open subset of X to itself. So if you knew all the birational automorphisms of X, then you'd be very happy, but that's not accessible in a case like this. So unfortunately, for every quadrics of dimension at least 2 over any field, the birational automorphism group is infinite dimensional. Again, there is some sort of briefly, you can view any quadric by projecting to a linear space as a bundle of conics over some lower dimensional linear space, and then you have a lot of birational automorphisms because the group PGL2 over a function field has a lot of rational points. There are a lot of
automorphisms of those conics over the fixed space. Right. So that's not quite good enough. But what you can do is sort of think more in detail about what this birational map must be doing along this divisor at infinity. So if you have a birational map from this such a variety to itself,
and I guess in this case we know that it's going to be an isomorphism from this open set to itself. Roughly speaking, the only thing that can be happening is that you're sort of blowing up some subvarieties of this divisor at infinity,
and then contracting various subvarieties. And the interesting case, what's going to happen is, so the simple thing that might happen is you might blow up some subvariety of D, so then you would get D plus some other subvariety, some other divisor, E maybe, and then you might go back down to X by contracting D to something lower dimensional.
So is it a, D might be contracted?
And then E would become this this other divisor D. In some sense, something like this is what has to be happening for any interesting automorphism of this affine variety.
Okay. Right. If, I mean, if D was just sort of mapping to itself, if you were blowing up a bit and then blowing down, then, yeah, nothing very interesting would be happening. Okay. So
the point is, then, that how can something like this be happening? Well, for this to happen, this some kind of exceptional divisor that occurs when you blow up would have to be at least birational to this divisor D that you start with. But the divisors that you create when you blow up are always ruled. That's the point.
So that's pretty clear by the way Hironaka proved resolution of singularities, but there's a more general result to that effect which came before Hironaka at the Ankara's lemma, which is actually true in any characteristic.
If you blow up a point, then you will actually get a projective space. If you blow up a higher dimensional subvariety, well, this blow up is going to be some projective bundle over that lower dimensional subvariety. It's not necessarily rational anymore, but it's still ruled because of that projective space part. Okay. So the point is that if this divisor D is not ruled, then nothing interesting can be happening.
Okay. So
for the details of this argument to work, I guess, so you can say something if the divisor is not ruled.
You can say a little bit more if D is an ample divisor on X,
which is the case, of course, for
a quadric and a hyperplane section of it, then every automorphism of this affine variety X minus D extends to an automorphism of the whole projective variety X, and those are easy to
describe. I mean, if you like, quite easy to describe the automorphisms of a projective variety. Right, so what I needed to do then in order to answer this question, at least in some dimensions, was I needed to know when the quadric at infinity in this example is ruled.
So so in the case where X minus D is a sphere, D is going to be an anisotropic quadric. If you just think about how this works, it'll be the let's see, I hope I got the dimensions right, but say x0 squared plus etc. plus xn squared equals 0. And that would be in Pn, so D has dimension Pn minus, D has dimension n minus 1, which looks right. Okay, so over the real numbers. So when is this ruled? And
whenever it's not ruled, then you get this conclusion that the sphere has only the only obvious automorphism. Okay. Okay, so that question had basically already been answered by Karpenko. We'll describe that. Briefly to say what happened. Special case of what Karpenko proved is that the anisotropic quadric, this thing over the real numbers, is ruled if and only if n is not a power of n. Sorry, n is not a power of 2. Okay. So that means, yeah, in most cases, for most dimensions, this quadric, although it's obviously not rational, it doesn't have any rational points, it is still irrational to project a space times something of lower dimension. In some cases, that's pretty obvious because in some dimensions, this just is a Pfister form, so it's obviously ruled by the argument I gave. And in general, this is what's called a Pfister neighbor, which is sort of close enough to being a Pfister form. But at least in a few dimensions, when n is a power of 2, so in that case, this is a Pfister neighbor, but a dimension of power of 2 plus 1, in those cases, this variety is not ruled. Am I saying this right? Yeah, in those dimensions, in a few dimensions, this thing is not ruled, and therefore, in a few dimensions like this, I get that the sphere has only a few automorphisms. Okay. So that's some motivation for considering the question. I mean, sorry, this is all over the real numbers, and that's some motivation for, considering the question of which quadrics are ruled more generally. Okay. So let me see. So what Karpenko proved more generally. So I have to define the first vit index. So let Q be an anisotropic quadratic form over some field. So then, in some sense, the most basic discrete invariant for an anisotropic quadratic form is called the first vit index. And it means the maximum dimension. So this, we're assuming this quadratic form is anisotropic. But what you do is extend the base field to the function field of this very quadric and then see how far it is from being anisotropic. Isotropic linear subspace for the quadratic form Q considered over its own function field.
So will this notation mean the function field of the projective quadric associated to Q?
Let's see. So when you pass from a field to the function field of this quadric, then this quadric sort of has an obvious rational point over that field, more or less by definition. So so this number will be at least 1. You'll always have at least one-dimensional linear subspace that's isotropic, but you could have a bigger dimensional subspace that's isotropic.
So basically what this invariant means is if this number is big, it's telling you that your quadric is very special.
So some examples are that if you take a so-called generic quadratic form, then the first bit index is always equal to 1, which is the smallest possible. So if Q is the quadratic form, say P1 times X1 squared plus blah, 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 plus Pn times Xn squared over the rational function field in n variables called P1 through Pn, where K0 could just be any field, then that's considered a generic quadratic form, and it has the smallest possible value for this first bit index. Easy to check. So that's sort of a very general, very complicated quadratic form over a big, complicated field. And then at the other extreme, you can write down very special quadratic forms where this number is as big as possible. So if Q is a Pfister neighbor, of dimension say q to the n plus a, where a is somewhere between 1 and 2 to the n.
That means,
very simple definition, it just means q is a subform of a Pfister form of dimension 2 to the n plus 1. Just the restriction of a Pfister form to a linear subspace of this dimension. Right. So, yeah, these are considered the Pfister neighbors. You might say Pfister forms are the simplest quadratic forms of all anisotropic forms, but they only occur in certain dimensions, and Pfister neighbors can be considered the nicest quadratic forms of a given dimension, which isn't necessarily the power of 2. Anyway, if that happens, then the first fit index of the form is this number A, and this is the maximum possible for any quadratic form of that dimension. Anisotropic form of dimension of this sort of dimension. So, this is a theorem by Hoffman that later there's a sort of a more systematic proof of this. It follows from the degree formula in algebraic cobordism, where you can prove it using spin rod operations on shell groups. So I get some examples of this, what this number means, and I was trying to say, that came up when I was trying to describe which quadrics are ruled. So here's the connection. There's this theorem by Karpenko, which is rather fundamental. It's sort of amazingly elementary proof. So, it says if X is any quadric, anisotropic quadric with first bit index equal to 1. So in that sense, it looks like a sort of general, sort of complicated quadric, then X is not ruled. And in fact, he proves much more. That's just sort of a general result about correspondences from this variety to itself. I'll explain why this implies the non-ruleness. So for any correspondence alpha in Chow group of the middle dimensional Chow group of X cross X, so if X has dimension N, suppose I have a middle dimensional algebraic cycle on X cross X. We only care about this mod 2. We have that the degree of the first projection of alpha is congruent to the first degree of the second projection of alpha mod 2. The degree one. Degree in the first direction means you take an algebraic cycle on the product, you just push forward to the first coordinate, and you got a codimension zero cycle on X, and this is just isomorphic to Z-mod 2. Correct. So this, each of these degrees is a number mod 2, and I claim that they're equal mod 2. So that's an extremely strong conclusion, so let me try to explain why. So the statement about degrees implies, how would you naturally get a correspondence from X to itself? One way would be if you had a map from X to itself, you could take the graph. And more generally, if you have a rational map from X to itself, you can take the graph and take the closure, and you get an element here.
So in terms of rational maps, this statement about degrees implies that for every rational, well,
every rational map,
from a quadric with these properties to itself, well, what are these 2 degrees?
The degree in one direction is just going to be 1 because this is the graph of the map, and the degree in the other direction is the degree of this map. So the conclusion is any rational map in this variety to itself has odd degree.
Which is quite
strong. For example, that means that, well, we already knew that x doesn't have any rational points, but for example, that tells you x doesn't have any rational points. If it did, you could just map x to a point and map that into x. That gives you a map of degree 0.
And more generally, this says you can't map x into any lower dimensional subvariety of x. So this kind of statement also fits in well with what you get from degree formulas. But in particular, that can't be ruled because if x is birational to y plus b1, then you could just have a projection from x down into y and into this lower dimensional subvariety.
Okay.
Oh, right. And then finally, I guess to connect all this up, I should say, you know, how to compute the first bit index for quadratic forms over the real numbers, but that's easy because every quadratic form such as this is a sister neighbor. It's obviously a subform of the tensor product of of a certain number of copies of the form 1, 1, tensor 1, 1, tensor 1, 1, and so on. So every anisotropic form over the real numbers is this very special kind of quadratic form of sister neighbor, and in those cases I've just said how to compute the first bit index. So so you see that, to sum this up, anisotropic quadratic form over the real numbers is non-ruled if the dimension of the vector space is a power of 2 plus 1. Okay, so this
gives a statement about
the automorphism groups of the sphere, if you keep track of the dimensions.
So that argument would show you that the automorphism group, every automorphism of the sphere in these dimensions extends to an automorphism of the projective quadrant,
and then it's easy to read off what those automorphisms are. Okay. Okay, so sort of an interesting question is, to what extent Kropenker's theorem is optimal here? So at least you can test enough low dimensions to make it seem convincing that the converse should be true. If x is an anisotropic quadric over any field, which is ruled, say it this way, if it has first bit index greater than 1, then x should be ruled.
Okay. So this is
true for, let's say this is just a projective quadric, it's true for projective quadrics of dimension number 7, you know, which is some reasonable evidence. Okay. Although the proof is not very satisfying, it's just that in low dimensions, you know what all quadratic forms look like. They're divided into a finite number of types. Like on a four-dimensional vector space, there's the forms that are similar to a sister form and all the other quadratic forms. And usually, you know enough about all the different types to be able to say it. Yeah. In the cases where the first bit index is greater than 1, usually the quadratic form is sort of related to a sister form, and so you can read off pretty easily that it's ruled.
But in general, it's kind of a mystery.
Okay. me see. So
a few directions to go from here. I mean, one thing that I'm sort of curious about is to what extent you can generalize this to hypersurfaces of other degrees. So that's a pretty general question. To what extent does quadratic form theory extend to hypersurfaces of other degrees? And in general, you might say that this looks absolutely hopeless. But actually, some interesting facts do extend, and you can sort of hope for more. In some ways, hypersurfaces of other degrees look totally different from quadrics. For example, it would seem absolutely fundamental to quadratic form theory that you know what all quadrics look like over an algebraically closed field, and that's absolutely not true in other degrees. But if you formulate things the right way, then some facts do extend. So, for example, this result by Mercurius. Basically, once you realize that Hoffman's theorem there only involves the degree formula in algebraic cobordism, that sort of automatically extends this argument to other classes of varieties. And it gives a nice form in some cases. So, for example, let X be a smooth hypersurface of some prime degree P, but not necessarily 2. In some projective space, with the way I remember this, the dimension of the hypersurface should be a power of p minus 1 for some a at least 1, I guess. So a hypersurface of prime degree p. So
in the case of quadratic forms, this is like those quadratic forms of dimension 1 bigger than a sister form, the ones which we show are not ruled.
In this case, I have to make some analog of the condition that X is anisotropic, and an analog of that condition is that if every zero cycle on X has degree a multiple of P, then
in the case of quadrics, that's equivalent to saying that X is anisotropic. So in general, this is not obviously equivalent to X not having any rational points. It could be that X has no rational points, but it has some other zero cycle of degree not a multiple of P. So you just have to live with that. Some things are different for quadrics and for higher degree hypersurfaces. But anyway, if you make this assumption, then again, X is not ruled. So this is over any field.
I think actually you have to assume the characteristic of the field is not P for Mercurius argument. So if X is anisotropic in the sense, then X is not ruled. And in fact, you have the same stronger conclusion as in Karpenko's theorem. For any correspondence which you might as well look at, my P from X to itself, the degrees of its two projections are congruent mod P. Which in a way is much, much stronger than saying that it's not ruled, as I tried to indicate. Actually, something strange about that is that, that's a generalization of this theorem, which seemed very hard in quadratic form theory. But Karpenko's theorem, which, as I say, has a very elementary proof, basically all it's using is the fact that if a quadratic form has a rational point, then you can split off a hyperbolic form. So it's extremely elementary stuff. Still, that doesn't have any obvious generalization to hypersurfaces of higher degree, but so I wonder if it might be true. So I'll just ask that as a question. Let's see. Suppose I have a hypersurface, let's say smooth of some prime degree P in projective space. Of some dimension over a field. Okay. What I'd like to do is imitate that statement. So I need to think of what the first vid index might mean for hypersurface of degree P, but actually there's a pretty natural way to imitate the definition. So suppose that that every one cycle on X considered over its own function field has degree a multiple of P. So I'll just say that for quadratic forms, this means that that I the first vid index is equal to 1. Yeah. So to say what's going on for quadratic forms this thing will be isotropic, so it will have a zero cycle of degree 1. So what the first vid index is telling you is whether there's any higher dimensional cycle, whether there's a curve of degree 1, for example, a line on there, for example. Okay, anyway, yeah, so you could make this assumption and then ask, does the same conclusion hold? So I'll just write it down. So is it true that every correspondence alpha connects to itself, you might as well only look at it by P, has the degree of the two projections congruent? In particular, that would imply that a variety like this is not ruled. Yeah, so this is kind of a natural question in birational geometry more generally, which varieties are rational, which varieties are ruled, even over a non-algebraically closed field. It's an interesting question, whether the field is algebraically closed or not. And yeah, I think this could be nice to know. And as I say, I think this proof is so elementary that it could be that there's a nice elementary argument for this, too. I have no idea what to expect. Right, so finally, I'll just conclude with one other thing I could show, which was that for a sort of a very weird character two situation, I could prove this conjecture. So let X be an anisotropic quadric over field of character two. Which is not smooth, so sort of going outside the setting where I've been working all this time. But it could be a regular scheme, for example. And the interesting thing would be to work over fields of characteristic two that are not necessarily perfect, like function fields. So suppose that X is nowhere smooth. It could be that in characteristic two, obviously in any characteristic quadric might be a cone over lower dimensional quadric, and then it might have some singular points, but not others. But I propose to assume that X is nowhere smooth. So there are examples of this. Maybe the last thing I should do should be just to write down what examples of this look like. But anyway, in that case, this conjecture actually works. So then X is ruled if and only if its first vid index is greater than 1. Sorry. So maybe the only thing which is sensible to do is to describe what quadratic forms like this look like. Actually, it's very easy to describe what they look like. They're just
they're the quadratic forms that look sort of like the same formulas you write down in Carabas Ignatius. So such quadratic forms, the ones that are nowhere smooth, look like some constant times a number squared plus and so on plus some constant times a number squared.
Where these things are
the coefficients are some elements of your field. So
of course in characteristic not two this would be smooth, but in characteristic two this is nowhere smooth. The derivative of this with respect to any variable is identically zero. And the thing is that there are somehow a lot of these quadratic forms. These forms correspond in a pretty obvious way to purely inseparable extensions of K. So if you have a field that's not perfect, then there are going to be a lot of these quadratic forms. And yeah, the theory is just, it's amazing that there's anything interesting to say about them, but there is sort of an interesting theory. Some of them are ruled. There's an analog of sister forms, which are ruled. Basically, a lot of the periodic quadratic forms goes through, and particularly you can answer this question. The reason it's sort of easier to just maybe conclude by saying, why can I prove something in this case, but not in general? So these forms have a very... the thing is that these are sort of close to being linear objects. The strong property that if you have a quadratic form like this, a quadric like this, that becomes isotropic over some field, then the set of points, the set of
rational points of X over that field is a projective space over that field.
So, in terms of the affine quadric, the set of solutions to the affine quadratic form being equal to zero, that forms a vector space. So that's an extremely strong property. It says that these quadrics are much closer to linear spaces than in general, which maybe makes it not so surprising that you can prove something like this. But I think I will stop there.